This Saturday, March 9th, the Albany Symphony will be at the Palace Theater in Albany, New York, presenting a program which features
Ravel's Bolero. I don't even know what that music was. What was that music?
No, but what is it's the one that
Hindemith. Hindemith.
Hindemith.
Matthias de Mala. Matthias the Painter.
Yes.
By Paul Hindemith.
Okay. Then Morton Gould's Fall River Legend. Ravel's Bolero.
Ravel's Bolero.
What you wanted to hear.
Did you say Ravel's Bolero?
Yes, Ravel's Bolero.
Bolero. Bolero.
That's the one you want to hit, right?
Maybe.
Okay, all right, we'll talk about it. And the world premiere of Robert Hanstein's Percussion Concerto Juvenalia.
That's right.
Excellent. Now, Robert co-founded the Sleeping Giant Composer Collective. He co-directs the Times 2 series and teaches composition at NYU, and he is our guest this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Juvenalia was commissioned by the Barlow Endowment for Music Composition at Brigham Young University for percussionist Colin Curry, who will be present
on
Saturday.
We should
night.
Hope so.
He better
and
be.
And the Albany... Yeah,
he's the soloist.
Change the posters if not. And... we'll be with the Albany Symphony Orchestra. We also welcome our dear friend, Albany Symphony Music Director and Conductor David Allen Miller, to the program. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great, Joe. It's so nice to be here, even if you did put us after the unbearably popular Beer Guys.
It's a great
lead-in.
We're
going to somehow muster some enthusiasm.
Lead-in.
Oh, they are. They're amazing.
Two things. One, you get more time, and two...
we get free beer.
You get
free beer. It's delicious. It's, too.
Yeah. Oh. Well, good to see you. So,
good to see
tell
you.
Us how this particular performance came to be.
Well, it came to be from a lot of different perspectives.
I should say program.
I have to say that it is the most kind of orchestrally sumptuous, varied, virtuosic program I think we're playing all year, because these pieces, there are four pieces on the program, and each one is a virtuosic orchestral tour de force, ending with Bolero, of course, everyone's
yes.
most famous, most favorite populist piece. The reason Rob's piece came into being is that I was conducting actually... Even though you have the best job in the world, I'd like to think I might have the second best. I was conducting in Honolulu, actually, and I was doing a percussion concerto with the great Scottish percussionist Colin Curry, who's been with us many times and is a incredibly charismatic, brilliant, one of the two greatest percussionists in the world. And the other one also being from Scotland, Evelyn Glennie, with whom we work a lot. And I said to Colin, we'd love to commission a piece for you. Whom would you like us to consider? And he said, Rob Hanstein. And we had just done this big residency with Sleeping Giant, of which Rob is one of the principals. And I said, well, I love Rob Hanstein, and I love Rob Hanstein, and I love his music. We'd love to do that. And so we ended up finding this great grant and commissioning it. And this now, a few years later, is that project coming to fruition.
So in doing that, tell us about the mechanics, the challenge, if you will, of putting a program together. Is it... I just came out of a beer segment, so I'm going to ask you about pairing. But what is it like to pair something with Bolero?
Well, you can pair almost anything with Bolero. Excuse me. That's the beauty of Bolero, is that people love Bolero. People will come for Bolero, we hope. And then it gives you freedom to do some kind of adventurous thing. So we've really kind of partnered three really wonderfully adventurous pieces with Bolero. So just briefly, we start with this amazing monumental work from 1934, Paul Hindemith's Matthias de Mahler, Matthias the Painter, which is like a symphony inspired by or created at the same time he wrote this monumental opera about the famous 16th century painter Matthias Grunewald, who made that one of the great works of Western art history, the Isenheim Altar, which so the whole opera and Hindemith's whole story is about religious freedom and the artist's role in society. And he was writing it in 1934 in Germany, and it was premiered by the Berlin Philharmonic right before he had to flee and then eventually come to America, where he taught it at Yale for many years. So there's this incredible, powerful orchestral tour de force by Hindemith, followed by Rob's very different orchestral tour de force, this percussion concerto for Colin Curry, which is just I guess an English person would call it a banger. It really is incredibly dramatic and lively. Second half, this gorgeous, charming little ballet suite by Morton Gould, Fall River Legend, his most famous ballet, inspired by the Lizzie Borden story. But in this ballet, instead of being acquitted as she was in real life, she is convicted and hung because, as Morton said to Agnes DeMille, who made the ballet, I can't write acquitting music, but I can write hanging music.
I didn't know that was a Borden piece. I love that story.
It is the Borden piece. Yeah, it's an incredible story. And then
story.
Bolero. So the nice thing about Bolero, in truth, is that it's so galvanizing and galvanic, whatever the word is, that's not a word, but that you can put almost anything with it and it goes great.
So let us talk to Robert
about... It's kind of like Pinot Noir, I guess. I don't know.
Sure.
Or not.
Or a good lager.
Or a good lager.
Give us Schwarzbier. Although you already have the, you have the German down.
You have the Schwarzbier.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert, tell us about this, how it came to be, and it is like to premiere this.
Oh, it is thrilling to premiere this. This is like an opportunity of a lifetime. First of all, Colin is just this world-class, exhilarating performer. Anyone who's seen him knows he just exudes energy, and it's just absolutely incredible.
So when you write, do you write thinking, oh, Colin's going to perform this, or do you just write to write?
No. In this case, because it's a concerto especially, I'm thinking about Colin. I'm imagining him, his energy, and his presence. That was a big part of it. Absolutely.
How would you describe it?
The piece, I think David's right. It's kind of a banger in a way. It's in three movements, kind of a traditional concerto form, if you will. You know, there's a fast one, a slow one, then a fast one. It's called Juvenalia, and that references two things. One, there's these ancient Roman festivals, which were kind of celebrations of coming of age, adulthood, transferring from childhood to adulthood, and they're very raucous, debaucherous affairs. So it has that kind of wild energy. But then also the word Juvenilia, which is different meaning but kind of sounds similar. These are early works by artists, works that are usually kind of forgotten or discarded. But I often think that in these early attempts, you can see these sort of inklings of what like might come to be later on. And so I was sort of looking back at myself, things that were influences when I was a kid, things that got me into writing music. So it has references to that as well. So I think it's like a celebration of youth. With a lot of wild, fun energy.
So the first one is like a rock band piece. It's kind of like if Rob were at home as a teenager improvising with his band, which I think he was.
Exactly.
It's this incredible drum track things for drum setists, sort of. And it's just a crazy, wonderful, inventive sort of piece. Really exciting. Yeah. So rockers will love it too.
Yes. Excellent. But there's something for everyone. There's beautiful melodies,
too. Oh, the second one is gorgeous. Movement. It's all gorgeous mallet instruments. Beautiful. Yeah.
How do the two of you work together in the sense of when do you, David Allen, Miller, when do you get a sense of what's going on?
Well, when Rob,
what it sounds like.
When Rob sends me the score, the music,
yep.
And then I spend X numbers of weeks and months learning and digesting the score, and I write to him or call him if I have a question. I ask them something about a metronome mark that seemed not quite right, and we talked about it, and Colin's been working on it for many months. And then today we get together and we start really going at it with the orchestra. Well, first we're going to meet as the three of us, and then we'll meet with the orchestra for four rehearsals, and then we'll bring it into the world. So it's a very concentrated but exciting process, and we've all done a lot of work to get to this point.
Yeah.
How do you work with the maestro and saying, oh, this would be good? Because obviously you're writing for Colin, but you're also writing for this orchestra.
Yeah. I mean, like David said, there's this huge process to get to this point of me writing and working with Colin. And I deliver a final product, final for this version, product of the score to David. And then I sort of trust that he's going to digest it in his own way. And I think really it's today that we're really going to begin a dialogue about very specific things, balance, tempo, stuff like that. So up to this point, not a ton. I'm sort of just doing my job and you're doing your job, and then we're gonna hash it out.
Right, but it's amazing when you see the orchestra in rehearsal how fast they work, especially our orchestra, because they do so much new music. The first time through, there may be some confusions, and by the second time through, they've solved like 97% of the problems. So it's the real excitement of having a virtuosic ensemble like ours.
Do you know the confusions coming, or does it often surprise you?
Most of what my studying is, in addition to just putting the piece into my brain, is figuring out where the problem places are.
Yep.
So that's the wonderful thing about being a little older as a conductor instead of being a, quote, young conductor, is that you really can see ahead where most of the problems will be. You occasionally get surprised by something that you didn't think would be a problem or something that you thought would be a problem that they solve effortlessly. But I think I have a pretty good grasp of where the challenging places are, and that's really what we focus in on rehearsal.
I'm getting a little bit in the weeds, but do you just let it happen and play out, or do you try to address the problem before it happens?
I generally try to take the orchestra through everything in the first rehearsal. Different conductors have different rehearsal strategies. What I've learned from my experience is that you just crash through everything in the first rehearsals. And what happens is, in the first rehearsal, and that way the players see where their challenges are.
Right.
So, and they also see the larger picture, which they haven't maybe seen by just practicing their part up to this point.
Whereas nothing illustrates it better than that, I guess.
Crashing through it. And then the second rehearsal and the third rehearsal, we go deep and work, work, work. And by the fourth rehearsal, we essentially reassemble. So it's kind of like one crash, two heavy work, and one reassemble, and then you're good to go.
When you're sitting, when this performance takes place on Saturday night, where will you be and what will you be thinking and will it be?
He'll be in the bar.
No,
Gershwin usually went.
I thought about this.
I
would. Well, let's talk afterwards. I thought about this a lot because, I've written this thing and I've put so much time into it. And obviously during rehearsals, I'm going to think about details. And there's going to be a lot of anxiety about trying to get everything right. But what I really, really want to do is during the concert, I really want to just listen and take it in and try to just be in the moment as much as possible because this is a long process. I mean, I don't know when we first talked. When did that call happen?
It was probably three years ago.
At least. Yeah.
Really?
Three years ago when that first phone call from David was like, oh, this might happen. And then, we had to kind of talk and we had to apply for some grants and then we got that.
I could commit that far out. I just assume I'd be dead.
Well, that's the beauty. It's kind of like an annuity. You get these pieces that appear that you planned years ago. It's kind of exciting, actually.
It comes down to this moment on Saturday night, which is this incredibly special moment, the end of this long process, and I really just want to enjoy it. I mean, that's actually one of the great pleasures of my job, and not so much David's job, is that I'm done. I'm pretty by that point, and I'm going to sit back and listen. You're going to be up there working hard.
And the beautiful thing for the creator, and this is something that I really am aware of as an interpreter, is that he or she, the person who creates the work, I mean, our performance is one stop on its journey, but the piece exists. So the next time it's performed, it may certain things that Rob didn't like or didn't feel were wholly successful may be successful or vice versa. And again, that's sort of, that really was pointed up in my studying restudying the Ravel for this week. I've done it before only once or twice, but I it's a fascinating piece, the Bolero, because it's so celebrated and so ubiquitous. Ravel himself was completely puzzled. He thought it was just kind of an exercise in orchestral color, and it had this kind of, Spanish Basque thing, because his mother was Basque, the tune. It's just about repetition and about playing the same thing over and over again with this percussion, with the snare drum playing all the way through, which is why I linked it to Rob's percussion piece. But basically, it's just repeating these two melodies over and over again for about 15 minutes with increasing loudness, dynamic, and with different instrumentation each time. And he thought of it as kind of this weird, stupid orchestral study, and then it became this kind of world-famous hit. And I remember there's a famous story about the first performances in New York. Toscanini conducted the New York Philharmonic in the American premiere shortly after the piece had been written, I guess in 1929, a year after. And Ravel was there, was in New York for this performance. And Ravel came backstage furious. Do I have a moment to tell you the story?
Or yeah, go ahead.
One moment. So Ravel came backstage furious.
Glares, but go ahead.
Okay, and said, "It's too fast, it's too fast." And Toscanini said to him, "You don't know anything about your own music. It's the only way to save the work," is what Toscanini said. So, Toscanini took this fast tempo. Ravel hated it. Ravel liked it slower, but the piece exists. It still exists, and it's fabulous, slow or fast, and we'll take it at a tempo you'll have to find out when you come Saturday night.
Can't wait. The Albany Symphony Orchestra will be performing at the Palace Theater in Albany on March 9th. That is Saturday night. And you can find out more by going to albanysymphony.com. Albanysymphony.com. Robert Heinstein, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Congratulations on this beautiful piece. David Alan Miller, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Again, you can find out more by going to albanysymphony.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.